Issues Etc. is listener-supported. That means we rely on you for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Hi, this is Todd Wilkin. Please consider making a tax-deductible gift to Issues Etc. today. You can donate online, issuesetc.org, or by check. Make your check payable to Lutheran Public Radio and send it to LPR, Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Thanks for your support.
Is it tough to not be emotional about something like this with a city you love and a team you've always been with?
You know what, man? I got my hope in Jesus Christ, buddy. And when you have hope on hand, you know, you can't be emotional about it. It's part of negotiation with the Cardinals. I have so much respect for this organization. They gave me the opportunity to play 11 years ago, you know. And no matter what went down yesterday, because we stopped that deadline, that doesn't mean that I'm going to be a Cardinal. We just put that stop when you had to put a deadline, because you don't want to bring all this distraction into this ball club. And we have a great team, and our goal is hopefully to win a championship this year.
Well, the familiar voice of Albert Pujols, first baseman for the St. Louis Cardinals. And the question, of course, still hanging in the air, will he sign or won't he sign? It is not uncommon to hear him mention his Christian faith when talking to reporters about baseball. Joining us for a biography of Cardinals baseball player Albert Pujols, Scott Lamb. He's director of research for the president of Southern Baptist Theological Seminary in Louisville, Kentucky, and co-author of the new book, Pujols, More Than the Game. Scott, welcome to Issues Etc.
Thanks. Glad to be on today.
Of course, the biggest news about Albert Pujols lately is contract negotiations. Do you think that his reputation as prominent Christian athlete and all, kind of all-around good guy has been sullied by those that news lately?
I think it depends on how deeply people are willing to think about the issue. I know that you all had Tim Townsend on a few weeks ago, and he had that piece that has a lot of soundbite quotes in it. And I noticed that over the weekend it got picked up again by Yahoo Sports. You know, about 3 weeks after the matter, only this time they just pulled out the soundbite quotes and ran a little headline, which most of the commenters, without going back to the original piece, assumed that myself and former St. Louis minister, Darren Patrick, and then Sean Michael Lucas, kind of assumed that the soundbite quotes we were saying were getting at the point that no, he doesn't need to earn that money. He doesn't need to take that money. He is greedy. So a lot of the commenters were, you know, railing against us. You know, like, who are they to say that? Some of it is just soundbite reaction. I think, you know, where the fans, particularly in St. Louis. And of course, I'm a lifelong St. Louis fan, but particularly in St. Louis, I think where there was a little bit of spurned lover, thought, you know, like, well, is Albert going to leave us like LeBron James? And I think that fed into it a little bit. Now, as far as the real, genuine, you know, thoughtfulness from the Christian community, I think if we're honest, yeah, there is a little bit of a fear that, you know, large amounts of money will change the character of the man. You know, that fear is out there. And yet it's not as though he's been playing for pennies at this point. You know, he's already earned $150 million in salary or so, and dozens more dollars and millions of more dollars in endorsements and things. And he's been very, very, I think, very careful with the money, and very free in his charity at this point. So the fact that he's going for $300 million, or going for whatever it is he's going for, you know, it's all speculative, but the fact that he's going for so much more, it's solely his reputation. I think it depends more on what he does with the money, not so much how much he earns, but how much he keeps. And that's something that is only going to be, you know, shown probably after he retires, you know, when he's done playing baseball. What does he do with that money for the next 40 years? You know, is he jet-setting with, you know, the Hollywood types, or is he going back down to the Dominican Republic? Now, it's a free country. He can do whatever he wants, you know. But as far as the Christian reputation, I think it's legitimate, but I don't think it's legitimate to criticize him as he's earning the money. I think it's more legitimate within the Christian, you know, family, you know, and with his accountability partners and whatnot. You know, if he becomes a multimillionaire who lavishes the money on himself, sure, you know, just like anybody who would be part of the Christian community in such a situation.
Well, more on Albert Pujols with Scott Lamb after this.
Wouldn't it be great if more of your fellow parishioners listened to Issues Etc.? Well, here's an easy way for you to publicize Issues Etc. at your church. Go to the support page of our website, issuesetc.org, and you'll find a short paragraph to include in your weekly church bulletin. Copy and paste the text for your church secretary or pastor to include each week in the Sunday bulletin. The bulletin blurb is updated weekly. Issuesetc.org. Stay connected. Issuesetc.org.
Did you know that you can listen to Issues Etc. live on most smartphones? Just go to the Listen Live page of our website, issuesetc.org, click the smartphone link, and you can listen on your smartphone weekday afternoons between 3 to 5 Central. Old Theology, New Technology, Issues Etc. now broadcasting live to the world on most smartphones. Issues Etc. issuesetc.org.
Talk radio for the thinking Christian. You're listening to Issues Etc.
If you're a talk radio junkie like me, you might assume that the programming is free. Commercial advertisers pay for the production costs and staff salaries. Well, that's true for most radio talk shows, but not for Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is listener-supported. We rely on you to pay for the production, salary, and airtime costs for this worldwide outreach. Hi, this is Todd Wilkin asking you to consider making a tax-deductible gift to Issues Etc. today. You can donate online, issuesetc.org, or you can donate by check. Make your check payable to Lutheran Public Radio. The address? LPR, Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. LPR, Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Remember, unlike other talk radio shows, Issues Etc. needs your financial support. We depend on you for the continuation and expansion of Issues Etc. Thanks for your consideration. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're getting a biography on St. Louis Cardinals baseball player Albert Pujols from Scott Lamb, co-author of the new book Pujols More Than the Game. Scott, before the break, we were talking about the greed issue. Has Pujols weighed in on the greed question? Have you been able to ask him about it?
No. He's got some very tight-knit circle of Christian accountability partners. I'm not one of those. I live here in Kentucky. I'm not part of his accountability group, but I know, starting with his own pastor, Phil Hunter, and some evangelists throughout the South, Tony Nolan and Mark Cahill, and then some of the guys that work in the Cardinals Chapel program, Grant Williams. He's got a tight circle of men who hold him accountable, and he asks them to do that. So, and then there's local pastors who have parishioners who are sports stars, you know, at the Journey and the Cross Scenes and things like that. So, you know, there's pastors who actually have, you know, this kind of interaction. I don't pastor a church with sports stars in it, so no, I've never talked to him personally about those things. I do assume, though, that they get real straight with him, you know, as they do with all the other issues of his life.
He is known for being outspoken Christian and placing central the concerns of his Christian faith, even as a baseball celebrity. Has his Christian faith always been as important to him?
You know, I think so. You know, in the biography, you know, when he came over to America at age 15, settled eventually in Independence after a brief spot in New York City. You know, his family, I think, rooted him in, you know, basically a moral code, which is pretty high in terms of honesty, integrity. You know, he's raised by his grandmother and some aunts and uncles. I think there was something in terms of a moral code that was that kept him really on the straight and narrow. I mean, I think even before he came to faith in Christ, there were things that there was a DNA, a fabric of morality that I think guided him. But then he met, you know, his future wife, Dee Dee, and she took him to an evangelical church there in Kansas City. And the pastor there actually spoke Spanish because he had been a missionary down in Central America. Dee Dee didn't speak Spanish, so she brought him, you know, to the pastor because Albert had a lot of questions about Christianity. So, and it was through the pastor and Dee Dee combined that he found faith in Christ. And, you know, I've heard him speak to a group where he specifically said that, you know, he's thankful that he came to America where he was able to really hear the gospel. You know, so whatever he was exposed to in the Dominican Republic, in terms of religion, I think he would acknowledge that he didn't, you know, have any exposure to hearing the gospel of Jesus Christ until he came to America. And so that's really early on. I mean, we're talking, maybe 18 months before he became, you know, a household name in St. Louis, you know, as a rookie, and certainly before all the great accolades came. So it was really early on that he found Christ. And that's probably the amazing thing, you know, even as a new Christian. I mean, nobody walks a perfect path here, you know, in our sanctification, but even early on, he was making the right decisions, putting the right kind of men in his life. And I think that's because it was rooted in the local church there in St. Louis, West County Community Church. And he immediately was attracted to, you know, some simple Bible study, and male accountability. And that's probably what, humanly speaking, that's probably what guided him into, you know, a deeper faith. Aditi herself, though, she's got a large part in, I think, helping him to be vocal in his evangelical witness, you know, to not just shake hands and, you know, say small little phrases of Christian expression, but actually, you know, become more vocal. And she's, I think, a real catalyst for that. And so...
You can't tell his story without telling her story. And just briefly, how would you describe her?
Well, my co-author Tim Ellsworth, he actually had some good interview time with her a few years ago in doing some story about her. You know, she's got, as we all do, you know, within Christianity, I once was lost, but now I'm found, was blind, but now I see. I mean, she grew up in a church, and she had her first daughter out of wedlock, and Isabella is a child with Down syndrome, and you know, she was definitely searching, wanting to something different than what she had at that moment, you know, and not sure where to find it. And I think that she, you know, found Christ, and at the same time she found Albert, and the same time Albert found Christ. I mean, it's all intertwined in that, you know, about 1 or 2 year period of her life. And I think whereas he came to Christ kind of in maybe a more of a moral fabric, and then found Christ, I think she, you know, she had a Christian, you know, community background. And then met Albert, who was just clean as a whistle, you know, no drugs, no drinking, no alcohol, no earrings, tattoos, nothing like that. And I think that she has testified many times that, you know, he provided an anchor of, you know, going down the straight path. And so he found Christ, you know, she was raised, more in a church, and together, they're just a great, they make a great partnership. They really do. He loves her deeply, was very committed to her even before they were married. You know, when you're a baseball player and there's, you know, the young ladies at every stop, you know, waiting to go back to you at the hotel. I mean, he was, even before he married her, the coaches said, you know, he would just sit in the hotel room with them and talk baseball, you know, wouldn't go out partying or anything like that, because he, you know, he professed love for Dee Dee. Then they got married, and, you know, he's a lucky guy and she's a lucky gal, you know, in terms of their marriage to one another. So I can definitely see, you know, a Ruth and Billy Graham kind of marriage, you know, between the two of them, especially when he retires from baseball. You know, I don't know what they're going to do in their Christian mission and their Christian ministry, but, you know, the two of them going forth, you know, upon his retirement, I can see the two of them going hand in hand into some really exciting work.
You mentioned before his charitable work, and a large part of that, if I'm not mistaken, has to do with Down syndrome children. Talk about that, if you would.
Yeah, well, you know, of course, as I said, you know, her first child is a child with Down syndrome, Isabella, and he adopted her when they got married. Basically, the Pujols Family Foundation has two focus points. You know, early on, before they got to the foundation, everybody was, you know, kind of grabbing onto him to help out this way and that way. And you know, he says, you know, I can't help everybody in the world, but I can go with where our heart is closest. And one of those points, of course, is the Dominican Republic and the poverty there. And then the second area is children and families affected with Down syndrome. And so in the St. Louis area, through the work of the PFF and Todd Perry and Jen Cooper there, they just come up with all these great ideas for getting children with Down syndrome out and doing things that are fun, things that are recreational, things that are educational. And, you know, you ought to pick up the, you know, some of the stuff off their website and their newsletters. It's just a lot of fun, and it's opportunities that probably children that don't have Down syndrome, you know, take for granted, getting to do these fun activities. And then the parents, what they get is to be able to come out and mix it up with other parents and look and see, you know, this isn't something to be, you know, ashamed of or just to stay in our home. You know, this is something we can have a normal life with our child, and we can get out there. And so it's a great support. And that's one of Dee Dee's main, you know, focus, it seems, throughout the years, has been to let the other parents know, you know, you don't have to just hide your child, you know. And, of course, here in America, 90% of children in the womb that are diagnosed with Down syndrome, 90% of them are aborted. And so, you know, that goes into the inconvenience of the whole thing, which is a very real issue, the whole inconvenience, so to say, that is, you know, perceived to be why these people would abort their children. But then also it's just this fear, you know, what am I going to do with this child? And, well, I just, you know, have to keep them in the home. I mean, they're not going to have a normal life. And I think Dee Dee and Albert and the work of the foundation really counters that notion, you know, and that a lot of these children, you know, there's a spectrum of Down syndrome, and some of the children can really achieve independence and high levels of training and education, and they certainly can become believers and understand, you know, Jesus Christ and the gospel. And so I think it's just a magnificent thing. And the culture of death that we live in, it's just a real practical, you know, fun way, almost, because, you know, they do a lot of fun things with these kids, but it's a way to counter the culture of death, you know, both directly through the spoken word, as Dee Dee has done at some pro-life events, but then also just, you know, saying, hey, you know, what's the big deal? This person's born, you know, with Down syndrome. You know, they were this way, you know, since conception, and they're worthy of life. So I think it's a beautiful thing.
Someone cannot have the rise in not only popularity, but in skill and in value to a team like Albert has with the St. Louis Cardinals in Major League Baseball without steroid suspicions. You guys devote a chapter to it. Of course, Albert has consistently denied any steroid use. What do we need to know about this?
Well, for us, you know, either we were going to devote an entire chapter or we weren't really going to mention it at all, to be honest, because, you know, once you throw it out there, then those who don't know anything about steroids at all or think, well, why are they even mentioning this? You know, is it even an issue? And those, if you only throw it out there for one page, those who, you know, think he's used steroids, would accuse him of using steroids. They would think, well, you know, there's not much evidence that he hasn't. So we, you know, we thought about it and we thought, well, let's just throw out all the ideas up on the board until we came to the issue of steroids and said, you know, there's no way you can prove that he didn't take steroids. You know, his testimony isn't proof. You know, it's just his testimony. So there's no way you can prove it. You know, you can prove that he's not taking them now, but what about when he's 18? What about when he's 20? You know, what about before they instituted testing? Well, if there's no way to prove it, you know, then there's only two ways to get through it. Number one, somebody can prove that he did. I mean, just literally prove that he did, and there's the smoking gun. Or we can just choose to believe, on the other side, choose to believe, first of all, his testimony, that he hasn't, and then look at the other evidences and see if those evidences go far back into his career, even to high school, or if they're just recent. You know, he doesn't want to get his hand caught in the cookie jar, so to say.
Well, when we come back, we'll talk a little bit more with Scott Lamb about performance-enhancing drugs, Albert Pujols, a biography of Cardinals baseball player and first baseman.
The beautiful shoreline, the calming sound of Lake Michigan, the glorious sunrise, the warm June afternoons. This is Wisconsin Lakeshore Luther Hostel on the campus of Concordia University, Wisconsin, June 11th through the 14th, 2011. The program, Dr. Paul L. Meyer, professor of history at Western Michigan University and frequent guest on Issues Etc. The topic, the Crescent and the Cross, Islam and Christianity. Dr. Meyer will cover the historical background of Muhammad, the rise of Islam around the world, the beliefs and practices of this world religion, and what its future may hold. In addition, the four-day, three-night Luther Hostel includes interesting day trips to area attractions. For details how you can register for Wisconsin Lakeshore Luther Hostel, sponsored by the Concordia Bible Institute on the campus of Concordia University, Wisconsin, visit the Concordia Bible Institute website at www.concordiabible.org or phone 262 243-4343.
We love our on-demand listeners. You're listening to Issues Etc.
A university is compelled to treat pro-lifers fairly.
This is a special commentary from the Susan B. Anthony List, named for the suffragette who was proudly pro-life.
The application for Vanderbilt University's nursing program required the applicant to pledge to participate in abortion procedures. However, that is no longer the case, thanks to the Pro-Life Alliance Defense Fund. Lawyers for ADF filed a complaint with the Department of Health and Human Services over the application pledge, pointing out that it is a violation of federal law to force people to participate in abortions contrary to their religious or moral beliefs. In response, Vanderbilt officials announced they would immediately remove the pledge from the application.
This is Marjorie Dannenfelser, president of the Susan B. Anthony List. To join us in our battle for life, visit our website at sba-list.org.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. Getting a biography of Cardinals baseball player Albert Pujols. Scott Lamb is our guest, co-author of the new book, Pujols More Than the Game. Scott, before the break, we were talking about how you and your co-author dealt with the question of steroid use, the steroid question with Albert Pujols. Pick up where you left off.
We just came up with all this evidence, you know, of his character, and that's where it starts from, is that his character, all the way from the beginning, is the kind of guy that, you know, he's not even drinking alcohol. You know, he's limited his own Christian freedoms. You know, he's not drinking alcohol. He's not smoking cigarettes. You know, he didn't even want to be in the room with somebody who was smoking cigarettes. You know, this is back when he was in high school. You know, and when asked why, well, that stuff's bad for you. Oh, well, like his tutor in high school, you know, would bring in a plate of cookies, you know, in the afternoon for a little snack for the guys, and he's like passing up on the Oreos. And why, you know? I mean, he's only two or three years removed from the Dominican Republic, where he barely got it, you know, three square meals a day. And he's passing up on the cookies. Why is that? Well, those things aren't really good for you. I better, you know, eat better stuff. And you know what steroids does to you. Sure, it makes you have some muscles and that kind of thing. But, I mean, there's a lot of bad consequences to that stuff and, side effects. So here, you know, we're supposed to believe that he's passing up the Oreos, but he's injecting himself with steroids. Again, that probably wouldn't hold any weight in a court of law. But I think, you know, when you stack up all the things that he's done and he said, you know, and his statistics have been consistent from day one. He's never spiked and he's never declined. And usually, guys who get caught with the steroids and they come off it, then all of a sudden their statistics slide. And you know, I think for me, you know, everybody's going to have to decide for themselves. And I would rather believe, based on this overwhelming evidence and his Christian testimony, which when it comes down to it, he says the reason why I don't is because Jesus Christ is my Lord, you know. And that, I know that doesn't mean anything to, you know, a secular reporter, sports journalist or whatever. You know, they probably just roll their eyes at that. But I understand where he's coming from, and I choose to believe that he's speaking the truth when he says he's never taken those things.
Talk about something that comes through in the biography, not only in the steroids chapter. This is a man who really understands that his entire living has come not only from baseball, but from the Cardinals organization and the kind of respect that he has for that club.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, the fact of the matter is he was passed over. You know, he's the 402nd pick in the draft, so every team in the league had a chance to get him. You know, including the Kansas City Royals, who, you know, he was just minutes away from their stadium when he was drafted. So every team had a chance to get him, and the Cardinals got him. You know, and we as Christians understand the providence of God in such things. You know, he could have been a New York Met, he could have been a California, you know, whatever. So, you know, he's here, and this is a city and a ball club with, you know, tradition, you know, the best sports town in America, whatever, you know, we'd say that. But I think that in addition to that, though, I mean, there's that tradition of, you know, Stan Musial being a hero that doesn't want to let the fans down. I mean, it's a different kind of team, and I think he knew that, understood that early on, you know. I mean, you don't have to be around the game too long to realize there's certain, you know, ethos to each, you know, club and stuff. And we're not the only one, you know, who has such a tradition. But I think he feels indebted to the Cardinals. I really do. You know, they've been with him. He's been with them, and they've supported him ever since the draft. You know, he's got a deep love for Tony La Russa. And he's met Stan Musial numerous times and just really admires, you know, the old guys that are still around. And I think he wants a part of that. You know, I think he wants to go down as, you know, the home run leader and the hits leader and all, you know, those kinds of titles would be great. But I think in the end, you know, I think he wants to be a 70-year-old man or an 80-year-old man who's still showing up at the game, you know, at Busch Stadium on opening day, throwing out the first pitch and having that kind of opportunity. Will he do that? Well, that's out of my, you know, that's out of my realm of experience and my knowledge, you know, as to whether he's going to get signed for next year. But I think that's probably what he wants. And his foundation is here in town. His family is here in town. His church family is here in town. His friends, his accountability partners, you know, his restaurant. There's so many things that are here. And, you know, I think at the end of the day, he does feel a deep allegiance to St. Louis and to the Cardinals organization. And we'll just see how that all that goes with the contract at the end of the year, though.
Does he think of himself as the best player in baseball right now? And that's kind of a question to the lure of ego would be enormous. You're constantly being affirmed, and not only financially, but by the fans and everything. Of course, you make your mistakes. But talk about the tension between best player in baseball and just ordinary Christian man.
To be honest, the real danger we had when we were writing the biography and thinking through, okay, what kind of biography would Albert be happy, you know, to read, you know, that we had written for the fans, but, you know, as he's reading it. And we knew the answer, you know, from his own people was, you know, don't make it a hagiography. Don't make it something that just, you know, especially an on-field hagiography where you're just, you know, he's superstar and he's, you know, next to Jesus and God, you know, in terms of the fans' eyes. And he absolutely pushes that away, you know. When, I mean, there's some of that you can't push away, obviously. People are paying, you know, $30, $40, you know, for a nosebleed section ticket. So, obviously, you know, there's some of that that just comes with the whole, you know, whole process of being a superstar baseball player. But when it actually comes to getting a microphone in your mouth, or when a little kid comes up and says, I just want to be just like you, he is so quick to say, you know, listen, don't try to be like me. Try to be like Jesus Christ, you know, or not try to be like Jesus Christ, but find Jesus Christ. You know, he's the greatest hero of my life. So, and he's very consistent with that all, you know, for years now. You know, and he says, you know, everybody thinks, you know, they would want to be Albert Pujols, the money and the fame and the fortune. And he said, but, you know, really this is just a platform, you know, for me to be able to, you know, glorify God and help a whole lot of people. And as far as the pride issue, I know for a fact that, you know, some of those accountability guys that he has in his life, he has them, you know, he has them under direction to make sure he's, you know, got his feet planted on the ground. I don't know that I could do it, to be honest. I mean, you know, if all that kind of stuff fell in my lap as a 21-year-old, 22-year-old, like it did for him, I was raised in a Christian home, the whole nine yards. But I mean, that is a lot of pressure, you know, the fame and the fortune coming so quickly. But yeah, I think he's pretty grounded. A lot of that probably has to do with the Dominican Republic roots he comes from, you know. So,
well, then finally, you spoke to a little bit to this a moment ago. Your prediction, do you think that Albert Pujols will retire in a Cardinals uniform?
Yeah, well, that's what everybody wants to know. Well, I'll say it up front. I hold no, you know, they're not asking, nobody's asking my opinion on this, you know, in terms of the Cardinals or the Albert Pujols camp. So this is officially just Scott Lamb opinion. I think he'll retire as a Cardinal. I don't have any doubt about that. The only way possible is if the Cardinals organization just absolutely, you know, has another mind, you know, mindset in the matter, which obviously that would seem to be the case. That's the only thing that could push him away from St. Louis. But, you know, it takes another team actually having the money. It takes Albert deciding to uproot his entire family. And I think in the end it's going to be done. I think there's nothing wrong with coming to free agency and seeing what other people offer you and let them offer you more than the Cardinals and then sign with the Cardinals. I mean, how much greater of a hero, you know, can you get in the eyes of the St. Louis fans than to, you know, have the Cubs offer you $35 million and then sign with the St. Louis Cardinals for $30, you know? Yeah, that's my official Scott Lamb opinion. He'll be with the Cardinals when he retires.
Well, you mentioned you're native St. Louis, and anybody you want to say hello to before we let you go?
Oh, I just love my folks. They've been a great support to me all the years, and Tower Grove Baptist Church, I grew up there, and they've loved me throughout the years. So, yeah, big shout-out to them.
Scott Lamb is director of research for the president of Southern Baptist Theological Seminary in Louisville, Kentucky. He's co-author of the new book, Pujols, More Than the Game. You can find out more about the book at issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Scott, thank you.
Thank you. Great to be on.